The beginning, the bundle, the brawl, and the broken nose. The beginning, the bundle, the brawl, and the broken nose. I was born into a household where hard work wasn't just expected, it was stitched into the very fabric of who we were. My parents ran a small clothing factory. It was loud, chaotic, and full of effort. From the moment I could walk, I was surrounded by the rhythms of toil, machines humming, fabric dust in the air, my parents constantly at the edge of exhaustion. They worked not just to survive, but to build something solid in a world that seemed constantly shifting. In my teens, I had dreams back then. I wanted to study physics, material science, something precise, clean, elemental. But life doesn't always offer you a clean trajectory. Mine came off the rails at Swanley Comprehensive. Swanley wasn't a bad school, not really. I had mates, I liked the mix of sport and academics, and for the most part, I felt I belonged. But Swanley had its own energy, like a bottle ready to explode if shaken too hard. I remember my first day vividly, the playground buzzing, older kids lurking like lions at the edge of the herd. Word had spread about the bundle, an annual initiation where newcomers got swarmed, and sure enough, the cry went up, "Bundle!" Most kids ran, instinct, fear, self-preservation. But I stood my ground, unsure if it was pride or stupidity. As the stampede approached, I started swinging, shoving, flinging, lashing out. Surprisingly, they barely touched me. They peeled past, some even laughing, noticing I wasn't going to roll over. I didn't mean to earn a reputation that day. The years that followed were full of minor scuffles, nothing criminal, nothing dramatic, just a boy refusing to be pushed. But Swanley had its own ecosystem, and trouble had a way of finding you, even if you weren't looking. That's when the Gypsy Boys arrived. Families rehomed from the site at the edge of town to behind the school at Hart Dyke Road. Names like Leonard Rye and Johnny Yielding joined our year. Leonard was wild, barely contained. He got moved from PY to PX, my class, after too many outbursts, and suddenly our room went from mildly chaotic to borderline unteachable. Leonard and I clashed once, a flare-up, fast and forgettable, ending in a kind of neutral standoff. Maybe I earned a flicker of respect. At least he never came for me again, but he came for others. One afternoon during PE, we were out on the field when Leonard exploded, fists flying at our sports teacher in broad daylight. Minutes later, limping, he vanished, only to return with his father and uncles in tow, marching across the pitch like a scene from a western. The teacher ran for the changing room, locked the door, hid like a fox in a storm drain. We laughed. Not out of cruelty, but because as teenagers, violence is theater, and we were just glad the curtain wasn't falling on us. Later came the Yielding gang, Johnny, his brothers, the Rise, the Clarksons. They fancied themselves Swanley's answer to the craze, terrorizing kids from bus stops to backfields. Down near the bus garages where I lived, we were mostly left alone, until one day they found us. I was 15. My younger brother Alkin was 11. We'd wandered too far from our patch, into Button Street by Farningham Woods collecting conkers. Suddenly, out of nowhere, potatoes, flying, dozens, hurled from a nearby field with precision. They rained down like rocks, smashing into our faces, our arms, our ribs. Alkin was wheezing, no inhaler. I threw him to the ground and covered him with my body, taking every hit. I didn't cry, I didn't shout. I just absorbed it all, burning the face of the boy I saw, Clarkson, into my memory. A scar waiting for reckoning. 2 years later, that reckoning came. I was in sixth form, sitting in the library, hunched over a textbook. And there he was, Clarkson. Big grin, louder mouth. He called me and my mates pansies for studying, his words thick with contempt and years of unspoken score. I looked up and said it clear as daylight. "Shut the fuck up, you miserable cunt!" The librarian heard. So did half the room. I got an earful and a warning. Clarkson got his moment, just not the one he expected. Humiliated, he spread word fast. After school, we were having it out in the rec opposite the school. Everyone would be watching. I went home at lunch, changed my clothes, dumped my books. I wasn't going to class. After school, I was going to war. But Clarkson didn't wait. As I stepped out of the sixth form block, there he was, already on school grounds, flanked by his mates. I thought, too early. Wrong place. Wrong time. He squared up, told me he'd changed his mind. Then, like a switch flipped, he swung. His crew piled in. It happened fast. Hands, elbows, boots, chaos. I went down. Then out of nowhere, someone jumped in. A quiet lad. Not a friend, barely an acquaintance. We only knew he was a Charlton fan, the sort of kid who kept to himself but was rumored to love a scrap. Today, the rumors proved true. His intervention gave me a second wind. I scrambled to my feet, found Clarkson, and let rip. I think I broke his nose. Maybe my own finger, too. I just remember the blood and the sound of Mr. Big Nell roaring like a bear as he tore us apart. My office, first thing tomorrow. But I never made it. My mother feared my hand was broken. The next morning I was at A&E instead of sitting in front of Big Nell. No call, no warning. By the time I got back, it was too late. Expelled. My dad met with Dr. Henry, the headmaster, and eventually the expulsion was overturned. But something in me had shifted. The sting of rejection. The rage of being misunderstood. The exhaustion of constantly being pushed to the edge. I never went back. Dreams of physics faded. The clean lines of science gave way to the messiness of real life. Maybe I wasn't meant to study the structure of atoms. Maybe I was always meant to wrestle with the chaos of the world outside the lab. I just didn't know it yet. With my dreams suddenly derailed, I found myself working in my parents' factory while attending college part-time. It was a painful setback that felt overwhelming at times, but instead of viewing it as a failure, I chose to see it as a unique opportunity to carve a new path for myself. Life had unexpectedly changed my direction, and I was determined to embrace this new journey and make the most out of the situation.